You are listening to RTFM, Real Talk FM Radio, a proud member of IRP, Independent Roleplaying Podcasts, and today's underwriter is affiliate station Void 1680 AM, a solo playlist building RPG by Ken Lowry. You can find it at bannerlessgames.itch.io/void-1680-AM. It's a great game. We covered it on one of our Patreon episodes. The real episode is starting now. I am still Aaron King. Don't find me anywhere except here. This is where I live.
Your Tumblr is a wonderful place. Find Aaron on Tumblr.
Okay.
maybe that's going against your wishes, but I'm
If you can find me on Tumblr, I'll be there.
I am Romaine Max. You can find me on all the places. Today we have an exciting guest. Jay, why don't you introduce yourself and let people know what your jam is?
Hi, I'm Jay Dragon. I am the editorial director at Possum Creek Games. I can be found in many places, although I don't know if I want to be anymore. But you might know me from such hits as Wander Home or Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast or The Good Stuff. Yeah, that's me.
Great. And we are here to talk Monster Hearts, specifically Monster Hearts 2, which is a role-playing game by Avery Alder, published in 2017. It's the sequel to Monster Hearts.
She has told me that, like, she warned me, like, never call the second edition of your game, like, don't call it, like, Monster Hearts 2. Because everyone all the time asks her, like, do you have to play Monster Hearts 1 first?
No, this is a reboot. It's a separate continuity.
Yeah, it should be called, like, probably Monster Hearts 2000, you know?
Too fast, too Monster Hearts. It's a PBTA teen horror sex role-playing game. It's not romance,
I don't think.
No, I definitely would not. I would not describe it as romance. Besides, like, maybe the, like, in the way that, like, Twilight exists in the romance genre, right? Like,
yes.
Part of romance is, like, in the same way that, like, you know, like comedies can depict some pretty fucked up things. I think that, like, there is space for, like, enjoying fucked up romance, and I think this game can be present in that, but I don't think that it is depicting, like, any kind of, like, happily ever after or, like, a star-crossed, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Star-crossed is the opposite of happily ever after, right?
Oh, fuck. Well, I'm thinking of the... Oh, God, yeah, you're right.
We understand romance here on this podcast. We're really good romance experts.
I've still never done a kiss.
Romeo and Juliet famously ends with them just gallivanting off into the sunset, right? I stopped watching the play, like, an hour in, so I assume it just only goes up from there.
Yeah, you can find Jay's Romeo and Juliet ending, the Jay Dragon ending. On Archive of Our Own. It's
called Gnomeo and Juliet. It was out in theaters. I was very proud of it.
Jesus. All right. We got to get into this game. Jay, I think when I asked you, like, oh, do you want to be on the podcast? You were like, yes, I know the true meaning of Monster Hearts.
Yes. So specifically what happened was that you were making a joke about how Max only wants to, like, you and Max only want to do sex games in this new season of RTFM.
Oh, that's not a joke.
Oh, yeah, I know, but you were joking it. You were saying it in a jocular way. And I was like, oh, well, then we have to talk about, like, have you talked about Monster Hearts yet? I want to talk about Monster Hearts because everyone's wrong about Monster Hearts except for me.
Which also, is my find my take. I love this take.
That's how you
my
know
fan fiction. Romeo and Joculette, the happy ending.
Ooh.
On AO3. No, we can cut all this out. This is my worst start of a podcast I've ever done. I haven't had my 10 a.m. pasta yet. So I think I like that approach. I was excited to have you on. I would love for you to say what everyone says about Monster Hearts.
Yes.
And I think then...
Yeah. I think what's useful if you are not familiar with Monster Hearts, like if you're coming into this and you don't know kind of what the popular discourse around Monster Hearts is, it's good to like think of it. So like this is a game about queer teenage monsters fucking each other up. For a while, it was like there's only like two trans women writing tabletop RPGs, and Avery Alder is one of them. And so for a long time, Monster Hearts was treated as like the queer game, right? Where it's like, oh, you're gay, you should play Monster Hearts. And it was very dominant as like the like one of the only games that was kind of really given that street cred. And then there was a backlash or a re-examination of it where a bunch of people were like, or like, I think there's kind of a quiet pervasive sense of like, oh, Monster Hearts is like, it's horny, it's scary, it's, you know, it's not like it's not safe. It's not like Thirsty Sword Lesbians that like, you know, doesn't, you know, like I can kind of, I don't have to really be thirsty or a lesbian or have swords to play it. This game requires you to kind of like buy into the idea of like sexual desire as like kind of a coercive power exchange that's like dark and too much. And like the fact that it's high schoolers is like too much. And so there's kind of a backing off of the game. And that is kind of the popular consensus is like anyone you talk to who knows about Monster Hearts broadly is going to land in either one of those two categories or in like the third enlightened category, which is like being smart and having reasonable opinions about art.
Sit in alone is what I've heard.
Only me. Yeah. I, not even Avery sits in. That's not true. This is actually like, it is to me, it's more of a thing of just like, when I have like one-on-one conversations with friends about this game, I'm always like, yeah, we're on the same page. And then whenever I see any kind of like popular discourse about the game or like people tweeting or whatever, they're always so wrong. And so I'm like, if I think that if there's any game that is worth like actually sitting with the book and thinking about what it is, what the game actually is and says and does, it's this game, right?
And I do just want to talk about the book super quick. It is self-published by Buried Without Ceremony. I don't know if Avery's too big to say self-published, but it's published by her.
That is accurate. She's still Avery.
And it's normal half letter size. It is 175 pages. That includes a lot of full page illustrations. I'm 40 now, so I get to say like the font is nice and big. It did not hurt my eyeballs to read it. There's very clear headings. I did just appreciate the organization of the book and the layout. It's really simple layout. I know that I am often like, I love textbook layout because I'm boring and it's clear and easy to get through. And to me, this is a great example of that. Not a huge fan of some of the art, but it's also like of a direct lineage of Apocalypse World, where I think Vincent Baker had a blog post that was like, here's how to make art for games if you don't have money. Get these free photos and up the contrast.
It's my pet peeve. It's my pet peeve.
Also like, if you look at the credits, like the layout and the art, everything besides the cover illustration is Avery, right? Like everything in this book besides like the specific section on race and then like the cover illustration and is and then like the editing, of course, like, but everything else is her. So like, yeah, the art is very like 20, you know, like it's got that 2012 indie quality, but I like it in this case, you know.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I just I would say if people want to do art like this, don't. I would love it. No, I think you can. I think there's if you just get yourself like a nice brush pen and trace a photo and then take a picture of it with your fancy phone that Avery probably didn't have access to in the past when those phones didn't exist, you would have, I think, a similar vibe and maybe some nicer art. And it's really fun to trace with a nice pen and teach yourself how to make choices of like, I'm converting this full color image to a black and white image. Like, how am I going to abstract? What am I going to leave in? What am I going to take out? Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I'm off today. I'm going off in all sorts of directions. As a book, like it is a great length. I would say about half the book is like mechanical stuff, and the other half is about like setting tone, doing safety stuff, helping other people learn the game, teaching how to hack the game. There's a section on running it at conventions. You know, there's an 80-page version of this game that is purely mechanical, and I like that we got this longer one.
I think a thing that I really appreciate about like this style of published games is like, this is a game that is like I think right now there is a big push towards like games at like book game books as art objects and like self-justifying by being like aesthetically compelling. And this, like, if this game was handed to me in a 3-ring binder that was like printed off of a Google Doc, I like all the material in the text would be there. And I think that like the fact that it is a book is like, cool. Yeah. Like, yeah, let's make it a thing that I can access that way. But like, I would be, this thing is first and foremost a work document, right? Like this is an object that is like,
I was just going to say, it's like, oh, it's your first day at Perkins. Here's our employee handbook kind of thing.
It's practical. Which is like a good quality of it. Like definitely, obviously I love me some art books, but like, I think when it comes to like, hey, this is a game that's just going to be real upfront about like, okay, this is how you do conventions, right? This is how you know, if you want to change this, change that, right? Like here's the mechanisms of it, not, you know, just focused on like legibility and like really just laying out every single choice made. It is very good at doing that.
Yeah. Legibility is a great word for that. Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's of an era. This is me being a shit, but we're going, whatever. That's the day. We're going to be all up on our horses today. It's of an era when games were for playing.
Right? Yes.
And so it is a book that is for helping you play the game. And I would not say that is necessarily what the point of most RPGs are anymore. So
yeah,
it exists differently, which is the art book comment.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just my personal pet peeve as somebody who's been working in Photoshop since like 1994, that it is literally the upping the threshold filter that is a thing that I do literally anything else in your photo editing, and I am here for it. So it is a very specific pet peeve that comes from like years of being a photographer, that is the only reason that it is a like, it is an attack directly at me.
I also want to note that Avery is a friend of mine. I have not like talked to her about Monster Hearts in any depth. I like will sometimes be like, oh, well, this is a thing I know about her. But I also like don't have any kind of like special insight into this game from anything besides the text. And I don't have any like, I haven't like run any of my takes by her or anything. So Avery, if you do listen to this and you're like, wow, she misrepresented my game, I'm so sorry. Oops.
You can come on and have hot takes about Wander Home.
Yeah.
we can start the revenge episode.
Yeah, the grudge match. Yeah.
But I would like to get back into the idea of like this game as a game about problematic sexual and romantic relationships. Your correct take. I think it's very strange to me that I haven't seen the discourse that you mentioned. And it's very funny to me that people have that discourse, because multiple times throughout the book, speaking of its legibility and its clarity, the book says this is a game that thrives on problematic relationships and perspectives. It can be tricky to know where to draw your lines, which is why it includes so much of that helpful text about that. And I know Max and I have talked about in the past, like, how often we would rather see a scrappy, truthful document that leans toward problematic than like a sanitized, you know, perfectly unproblematic, but therefore like frictionless and boring book. And so, you know, let's get back into that. You mentioned Thirsty Sword Lesbians. I've run it a few times. It's fun, but it is sort of washed clean of some of the more textured elements that you get in Monster Hearts.
Thirsty Sword Lesbians is an extremely fun game.
Yes.
It is all about fun for me, having played in those games that you ran.
Yeah.
What's funny about Monster Hearts is that, like, obviously, I'm a queer. So people Newsflash. So many people have been like, you must like Monster Hearts. And I've never played Monster Hearts because the pitch to me of we're going to do awkward, like, teenage queerness, sexuality, whatever, is a thing that I don't have any desire to do again. And so when people are like, you want to play this shitty period of life, I'm like, no, I'm going to play Thirsty Sword Lesbians. Thank you. But I have been on the receiving end of the, like, you're a queer who likes RPGs. You gotta love that Monster Hearts. Also, like, you must want to play with your feelings, which is, I think, the funny association for me between queerness and RPGs often is, like, you must want to do, like, hard, serious feelings games. And I'm like, I don't usually. I think I'm the only one. Aaron, you've played it, right?
No, I haven't played Monster Hearts.
Well, I'm the only one who's played it. I played it a lot. So I was actually the second tabletop RPG I ever played after 4th edition D&D was a lot of Monster Hearts.
And 4th edition is often called, like, the Monster Hearts of D&D.
Yeah. I would describe those as, like, it's weird, the number of, like, the lack of credit for 4th edition, considering, like, the entire, like, you know, like, the action economy of Monster Hearts and the grid-based tactical combat is lifted directly from it.
What is high school but grid-based combat?
Hey, there is one of my favorite little, it's a completely ADHD tangent here, one of my favorite little bits in Monster Hearts is the, like, during character setup, like, okay, let's make the grid of our, like, homeroom seating arrangement, and then,
yes,
like,
the seating out chart is great,
so good, just so fantastic. But I played it a lot with my friends, and we were all like 17, 18, 19, and we were undergoing our Monster Hearts IRL experience. So for me, there's a little bit less of, like, oh, let me return to a time that I, like, have bad memories of and I'm no longer part of, and a little bit more of, like, most of the games of Monster Hearts I played were in the midst of that time. So they have a little bit of that, like, raw, but also, like, fun quality that does it for me. Like, to me, Monster Hearts is not a game where it's like, I'm so sad and depressed that I'm a vampire. It's like, hey, I'm going to go fuck your dad to piss you off on purpose. You know? And then it's like, oh, you're going to go do that? Well, I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, okay, let's fucking go, right? Like, it's a very, like, it's a game where, because of the fact that you're playing with people, like, playing with people you trust, you're building up that rapport of connection, you can, like, get the most kind of volatile impulses possible and just lean into them. And really just, like, it lets you be dastardly, I think, in a way that other games don't create the space for. And that's where a lot of the fun for me comes from, is being like when moments where it's like, oh, one player, like, you know, cheats on another player, but they weren't actually dating. They just both were pretending they were dating. But then, like, the cheating is a bigger problem than, like, the fact that they, like, earlier that night killed two people and drank the blood together. It's like, there's, like, a lot of, like, it's a lot of, like, let me just lean into my, like, there's a thing in Monster Hearts, there's a passage in about NPCs, like, characters, like, they're stolen fun in Monster Hearts, is, like, have you ever wanted to drive 90 miles an hour down a 35 and go until the fucking car crashes, and then climb out and grab another car and keep going? That is Monster Hearts as a fun thing, right?
Yeah, there's the MC chapter, like the GM chapter, Avery doesn't call the MC things moves, she calls them reactions, which I really like. But one of them is give side characters simple divisive motivations, which I really love. Like, this is all about, it's not about creating three-dimensional, you know, populating the world with verisimilitude and reality. It's, like, about creating the asshole cheerleader that's in every teen movie in the 90s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just, like, smashing those NPCs into the main characters to create division, to incite them to, you know, literally or figuratively rip their heads off. And I love that. Like, it's just a way to, it's a way to separate this kind of overblown teen action maybe from the real feelings. I think those people that we knew in high school maybe felt like one-dimensional, divisive people. And maybe they were. But, you know, as we grow older and are forced to admit that most people are more three-dimensional than that, it's just nice to have a game that expressly instructs you to make some assholes and have them say asshole things.
I think this is a little bit... So, like, when Monster Hearts has been pitched to me, the reason that I have not taken a huge interest is because it is largely presented as, like, softer in feelings than I think it is. And which I think is, like, misattribution of
queerness. Is this the discourse?
Right? Like, is that, this is the discourse. But, like, there is an association between, like, queerness and also sex in games and all of those things that are like quite soft, and for me that's just like so not my experience of queerness. And reading it now and having this conversation with y'all, I'm like, yeah, like if I was in my early 20s and still doing the thing where we were all like banging each other because we got a little bit too drunk and then there was like an orgy in somebody's dad's bed or whatever, and that happened to be cheating on the person that you also were like kind of interested in, like that in that time I feel like it would have been so much fun and also really messy, like that that would have been so chaotic and great. And there's a part of me that like now can envision being like, that would be super fun to replay, like historically. But because it was pitched to me primarily as like more about feelings and less about being a little fucking shit.
Yeah, this is not actually a game about like being present in your feelings. This is a game about doing like, men will do anything except be present, right? Men would rather turn into a werewolf than like acknowledge someone, right? Like this felt like nothing just possible to everyone around you, and being and like at the
Jay's cutting in and out, but I assume we'll get a clear recording.
Oh god,
I also hope that
it's all right, because so it should be recording it should be recording locally for you too. Then Max will get all those files at the end.
That's the
I think I got the gist, but I just wanted to make sure that if I did not, it's not because I'm purposefully misunderstanding you, but because I couldn't hear parts of it.
No, for sure. Am I better now?
But speaking to the like, it sounds fine now, it just was like a few seconds. But yeah, I think like speaking to the like overreacting and the massive feelings of it, two of the movies recommended in the back are Ginger Snap, which I watched, I think, last Halloween for the first time, and then The Craft, which I made sure to rewatch to prepare this for this recording. And I love both those movies. I went and I like looked them up. I always like to see what reviewers said about the movies, like when they came out, and then if there's been any retrospective. And one of the things that someone said about The Craft was like, well, it's almost a feminist movie, but then the girls are mean to each other. And I'm not quite saying the right thing, you know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's this funny thing, like in relation to the Monster Hearts Thirsty Sword Lesbians dichotomy, like portraying women realistically living under misogyny, living through the hell that is high school, is to some people not feminist, whereas portraying women overcoming those problems and becoming friends is feminist. And I think Ginger Snap does something similar, where it's like I kept hearing my internal kind of modern feminist lens or whatever being like, well, I hope these girls really get it together and overcome their problems. And the movie is not about that. Like, it is about someone who's been acting under this yoke of like not being allowed to feel or act the way they feel or show those feelings, finally getting that freedom. And sometimes that's heinous and sometimes it's joyful. And that's just like the realistic act of being
personally, I think 18 one of my least
and trying to navigate all that stuff.
Is the grown-up moves or the growing up moves where like
Yeah, do you want to describe the moves?
So Monster Hearts gives you a set of basic moves, right? Like a lot of PBTA, that are all like, you know, turn someone on, right? Run away, you know, like embrace the messy things. And then when you get enough XP and you level up enough, you can start unlocking moves that, like, give you a more mature, like, problems, right? It's like, oh, well, instead of, you know, turning someone on, I can make someone else, like, shutting someone down. I can call them on their shit. It's like, I get kind of what is happening didactically, where it's like, oh, you know, like it's for your characters once they're able to grow up enough. Like, there's a place they can get to that is that. But I also just think that the idea of, like, taking Monster Hearts and the way you relate to each other and then being like, oh, but if it's okay, because give it enough time and you can figure out how to be mature. And I'm kind of like, oh, well, but then, like, I don't know. It's just a weird – it's a thing that I'm not – a big fan of in a game that I otherwise really love. And I think it's the same reason you just
said. Yeah, I think there's like a... I guess there is a potential in those grown-up moves where you like could have a happy ever after. And I think that like... Because you could resolve conflicts and kind of like tie everything up neatly with a little bow, which I think is at odds with its strength.
Yeah, because it's like, as you said, with the one-dimensional, like, as Aaron said, the two-dimensional characters, like, characters in this, like, the world is melodramatic, it's two-dimensional, and giving an out for being, like, you can figure out how to be no longer two-dimensional. There is a way for you to break out of the melodrama, but only for you. It's just a little odd in a game that otherwise I think is really good at being. And like, there's a couple moments of that with Monster Hearts where I think in the name of kind of making sure that like it is as accommodating and like flexible as possible within its messiness, it sometimes makes choices where I'm like, I want the game to be messier and to be harsher about it and be meaner to me. Like, the game is like a little too willing to step back and put its hands up and be like, well, there is, you know, there is a way you can learn to love each other. And I'm like, right. But then, like, why am I playing Monster Hearts?
Yeah, I think that's valid. I think it is easy enough to just kind of, you know, if you're playing this game with someone and everyone's like, we want to stay messy. Like, it's easy enough to gate that stuff off and continue to be the dramatic people you want to be. But yeah, it is kind of in including all this extra language around how to run the game, how to hack the game, sometimes it does feel like there are little tendrils pointing away from the core loop of the drama, the strings that you get on people, and exploiting those strings.
I mean, having said that, I'm, you know, 20 years out from that period of my life, and some of those people that I was extremely messy with are my closest people. So it's also a, like,
that's true.
Accurate That's representation point. Of the thing that it's doing is that, like, you might actually, like, you might treat people horrifically and actually figure out a way to overcome that and be incredibly close with those people is, like, accurate to the world. Not that games need to be accurate to the world, but I do wonder if part of the goal is, like, you can be a total shit, and that doesn't mean you're a total shit forever, or it doesn't mean that you don't have to at some point take responsibility for having been a total shit and move past it.
That's true.
I have. So, like, I can get it. Doesn't mean it's where I want to play, because I think
Max is leveled up. Listen, Max is has 8 advancements.
I was so messy, guys. I really needed those moves to get me out of there. Mm-hmm. I thought I was being nice. I tried to be nice. It was not true. Not true.
Which, speaking of moves, can we talk about turn someone on? Because I think that's my favorite move in a game that has some good moves in it.
Yeah. I have it open if you want me to read it.
Read it out.
Turn someone on. When you turn someone on, roll with hot. On a 10 up, gain a string on them, and they choose a reaction from below. On a 7 to 9, they can either give you a string or choose one of the reactions. And then the options are, I give myself to you, I promise something I think you want, or I get embarrassed and act awkward.
So
take it away. What do you love? Yeah.
So the thing I love about this move, right, is that there's a lot of conversations I've had both with like Vincent and Meg at the Baker family and also with Avery about like mechanics around consent, right? Where it's like part of the problem with like command person or like persuasion checks in D&D is that they're like, they're this kind of invasive mind control where you are like making someone do something they don't want to do. And there's a lot of ways to like think about consent and like, what is it to like, you know, like seduce someone where you are like, you are being compassionate towards their reality and it's not just you asserting something into theirs. And this move does none of that on purpose. And it's good because this is a move where it's like, you think your character is one way. You think you've got a model of your character. But guess what? They just got turned on by something I did. Like, figure that out, right? Like, it's in your court to figure out what the fuck to do about the fact that, like, you think that my character, like, you think your character finds me repulsive and would never think I'm sexy. But the way I smiled at you turned you on. That's just a truth of the way it rolled. So, like, you work through that. And I think that is just a really fantastic way of mechanizing toxic teenage sexuality and desire, that it kind of breaks a pretty foundational rule in, I think, how I and also I think Avery thinks about like consent in games in a way that works really well.
Well, it's also like, what, maybe I don't need to give out awards for things, but especially not to Avery, who's like, everybody knows Avery's a genius, you know, like, hey, but
she's never won an Emmy.
Fuck, because the Emmys are bullshit.
That is,
if the Emmys were worth anything, I'm gonna give her an award.
I think she's, we've covered three of her games now.
This is so the only person, yeah, we've covered three games.
That's the RTFM turkey award. A turkey is when you get three strikes in a row in bowling, I think. If it's not, and I'm
we're clearly sportsmen here.
Anyway, congrats, Avery.
The turkey.
Here is your turkey.
For me, it's just like, it's the gayest mechanic in an RPG. Like, it is the most succinct, like, experiential queerness that I've read, because your character can reject that, but I can't envision games where that doesn't present an access point to queerness, even if you're trying to play like a het character. And also, like, that is the point. Like, there are no teenagers that at some point didn't get turned on by something gay. It's just the world pushing that. Like, it's just like, I don't know. I don't always like things that are so paralleled one to one to the world. But mm-hmm. This feels like an instance where it's a very clever translation of just like being a teen. There's no world probably in which that's not happening. It might feel uncomfortable and it might feel horrible, right? Like, getting turned on when you don't want to be turned on might be the worst thing that happens to you. But also probably is a like pretty universal experience. Not everybody, obviously, but like, it feels like a very as universal as an experience can be. And it's presented with this, you don't have to deal with this. Like, I think the problem with all of the other mechanics from other games that we can mention is that you have to do something because of them. And the way that it does, the move inherently like has player consent kind of written into it. Maybe not character consent in the experience of being turned on, but there is player consent in how you react to it, and often with things like command person or whatever, there isn't. And I think that line break is the difficulty for people, rightfully so. Whereas, like, is it not the rest of the text? I don't have it in front of me, but the rest of the text, in my mind, it said, like, you can ignore this. Like, you can do whatever. Like, there's a lot of...
There's a section on asexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's non-attraction, which I'm friends with the consultant who helped draft that page. I don't like how it's executed And I also understand why it's there and the work it's doing. And I think that the work it's doing is important. I think it just doesn't line up with the rest of the claims Monster Heart is trying to make, even though I understand why it's there.
Yeah.
I have complicated feelings on that asexuality page, because everywhere else Monster Heart says, you do not have a perfect handle on your sexuality, and even if you think you do, it will challenge you and surprise you and fuck with you. And then it says, oh, but unless you're ace, in which case there is no situation in which that is always a thing. And I understand why it is that way, because of the fact that having sexuality forcibly applied to you is traumatic for a lot of people on the ace spectrum in a way that isn't necessarily cropping up in other ways for other folks. But I wish that there was maybe a more elegant way of approaching it. And I don't know if there was. I have really complicated feelings about that specific part, because it was a thing that was added after I played a lot of Monster Hearts. And so coming back to Monster Hearts and seeing that and being like, ooh.
Well, I don't know if this is what you're expressing, but for me, a huge draw of this game is you have characters whose sexuality you are discovering. And by placing it before that, you are inhibiting that progression, because there's no reason that you can't play this game, get turned on a bunch by other people, and discover that your character is ace, right? Is an output. Exactly. You are discovering that your character is ace is a totally legitimate and option, open option in playing this game. Dictating that your character is anything at the beginning does kind of play at odds with what I think the game wants.
And it's weird to me because it's specifically asexuality. I think what this is, right, is that there was a critique of Monster Hearts that came out after the first Monster Hearts that was this, right? That the way it handles asexuality means that if your character is ace and you know your character is ace and your character is forcibly turned on against their will, that takes on an additional oppressive undertone that would not otherwise be present. But as someone who both has been turned on and has at various times wondered if I'm ace, and struggled to reconcile those two things, that shit can just happen, right? That's part of the world. And I appreciate kind of the compassion, but I also think that I think it's a good thing for people to be aware of coming into Monster Hearts, especially if it means that someone is willing to engage with the game that maybe they wouldn't have felt willing to otherwise. But I do think that it undercuts one of the big arguments Monster Hearts is making about what it is to be a toxic queer teenager.
Yeah. One of my favorite sections is reasons to play. And it's just 3/4 of a page. The intro to it is, after a big talk about risk and care, it's important to remind ourselves why we're taking the risk in the first place. Why play Monster Hearts? And this is coming after the safety tools and explanations about the toxicity of some of the character skins and stuff. But one of the parts in this one page is, you play because adolescence is a confusing time and you're still making sense of your own. The stories you tell in this game will probably bear little similarity to your own experiences, but they'll still tackle the same themes. There's that friction there of saying this game wants your character to be different from you, and then find thematic resonance between your past and these characters present, and to provide certain outs from that does seem, like Max said, at odds with this reason to play the game.
Yeah. I think that coming into Monster Hearts, having a confident understanding of your character's sexuality makes the game a lot sharper than it has to be, and kind of goes against I think it's kind of a culture of play thing, right? Where it's if you're coming at Monster Hearts with an OC forum roleplay culture, and you're oh man, here's my blorbo, I've got 5 pages of lore on my Monster Hearts vampire, here's how I'm gonna play them, they're a lesbian and they feel that way, and then the first scene a man rolls to turn them on, and it's whoa, you've just contradicted my understanding of my character's inner world. Whereas I think if you take Monster Hearts on terms of its text and treat it as I have a character who is like the composition of a bunch of choices I make during character creation and then the choices I make during play. And it's just whatever iteratively spins out from there is how I will understand the character, right? Like, I have no special access to my character's inner life. I only have the same thing everyone else does, which is the, like, the language they use to talk about themselves and the, like, set of experiences they have gone through and things that have happened to them. Then it's like, oh, my character believes they are ace, or my character believes they're a lesbian or whatever, and that has been challenged, but my character still believes they're a lesbian, right? That, to me, is much more interesting and more healthy, and I think maybe a better way to think about identity broadly, right? Like, you can believe, you can be a lesbian and get turned on by a guy and still be a lesbian. Like, that doesn't undermine anything. And it's kind of weird that there's like one moment where it does, and then besides that, it doesn't.
So it's like OSR character creation.
Yeah.
Your backstory is levels 1 through 3.
Playing Monster Hearts as an OSR game would be deeply bizarre. But I'd be really curious about what spits out on the other side.
Yeah.
I so deeply want, at one point I was working on a PBTA game with a friend that maybe someday will see the light of day. But the whole idea was like, I mean, the base idea was that like your relationships are what make you powerful, but that's a very whatever twee way to say that. But the idea was that it would be like split between dungeon delving and then like as if the behind the scenes of the characters are like a reality TV show, as like jumping back and forth. And I've in my heart of hearts, it's like, great. So you have Monster Hearts over here where everybody's being fucky and messy to one another, and then they have to like exit the room and go fight a monster and figure out how that applies to whatever monster they're fighting. And I really want that to exist. Somebody else could make that also, so I could just play it and not have a million works in progress.
Can I recommend Venture and Dungeon by Riley Rethel and Jay Dragon? Oh, I think God. You could get to it.
I think if you age up Dungeon a little bit, you can maybe start approaching, or maybe I know Ratwave Games, Kayla Dice has been working on a BOB that is an office screwball comedy that is psychologically represented.
Oh, Psycho Dungeon.
Yeah, Psycho Dungeon, where it's like you're both characters, you're kind of like characters from the office, but you're also like working through your workplace anxieties by engaging in this like dungeon delve together. And that, I don't know, there's something there as well to me.
Yeah, that sounds rad.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite playbook?
Did you say favorite or which one am I in real life?
Which is your favorite? Which one are you in real life? But I'll take both. I didn't even think of the second question, but now I want to know the answer really bad.
Did we do this?
I did think of the second question because we did it with something else and I don't remember which
Changeling?
One.
Did we do it with Changeling Maybe. And all the World of Darkness creatures?
Okay, but you can also say what you were when you were a teenager. It doesn't have to be you right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Hold on. I mean,
I love the werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was not a violent teen. I may look from the outside like I was a violent teen. I think I was thinking about this because I imagined that I would ask the question or that Aaron would ask the question. So good for jumping in there.
I didn't mean to. I forgot that it was a question on our thing. I just wanted to ask that.
No, it's not on our agenda. It's okay. Just something we have asked before. We all independently decided this is good radio. So
it's just a good. I just want to know. I just
Yeah, I think I was closest to ghosts in my high school time. I actually had like a very neutral to positive high school era, which I am like constantly thankful for and feel privileged about. The werewolf just appeals to me as someone who like grew up thinking all anger is bad and is now trying to learn like, oh, there are things to be angry about and ways to use that anger that is good and also still that is bad. So
I think I was the witch. There's a very kind of like the witch is one of the ones that's a little unclear about the metaphor, but to me it's very much like entangling yourself with others as like kind of a little bit of like a you know, like, oh, you know, like, you know, you're staying at my house, you know, like, I'm throwing the parties, I'm, you know, like, my I've got a finger in everyone's pie. I'm very, like, I don't know, there's something that there to me where it's like the idea of, like, when having, after having sex with someone, I get like a little lock of their hair or something and they're cool with it, felt very me in high school. my high school partner, like, we were together for, like, I think the last year of high school, but I always think of them as my high school boyfriend because they're like my only really actual long-term one, quote unquote, took my wisdom teeth after we were together and included them in his tooth shrine, because he had a shrine.
Were they still in your mouth?
No. After they were removed from me, he had a tooth shrine of them. And I used to joke, whenever I tell that story, I used to joke that I was so grateful that he never did anything with them. And one time he heard that joke and he was like, I would never, no matter how mad I got at you, I would never curse you with your teeth. And I was like, thank you. So now I have to give him credit but that was, I feel like my high school vibe and experience was like, I'm a little worried that my ex-boyfriend's going to curse me with my wisdom teeth. He won't, but I worry.
I feel like, really embarrassingly, I might have just been a fat ghoul.
Oh, yeah. Yo, the ghoul is real.
The ghoul's really good. I like the ghoul playbook a lot.
I was very depressed and very desirous of a lot of things when I was a youth.
Yeah.
And also, like, once I started being a person who was sexually active, I was really the person who, for a lot of people, they were like, oh, I'm going to use this space to safely try things, frequently not while being concerned about whether or not that trying of things would have any kind of, like, emotionally damaging impact on me, but yeah, so I feel like there's this, like, I don't know, because I mean, I grew up in a queer household and I grew up in a non-monogamous and, like, BDSM forward household, and so I was the one that, like, new, like, there's something about the sex move being like you create a new hunger, that there's this, like, I really wanted to explore a lot of things but was also just so sad and impressionable, but definitely also a fatty, so none of this gaunt body nonsense. It's not applicable in this context. I feel like I was a sad which is funny because, like, I did fine in high school. I did. Ultimately, I was fine. I had friends. I made connections at one point. I just always felt like I was not doing that because I was the only gay. For a long time, yeah. I was the only gay, which is wild because I don't feel old enough to be like, I was the only gay, but it's a truth.
I'm stupid. I was the fairy. Sorry. I forgot there was a fairy. I'm just the fairy. Never
mind. Wow, how stereotypical.
Yeah, I'm the fairy.
But that's not what they are in this book.
No, I know.
No, it's totally not.
It's worth saying. Yeah,
the fae is like the fact that I think that to me the critical thing of the fae is when you lie naked with another, you can ask them for a promise. If they refuse, take two strings on them. So you get to be like, promise me that you'll love me forever. And if they're like, no, then it's like, okay, you owe me then. And if they're like,
and there's this sense too, that I feel like there's always someone in friend groups that's keeping track of, like, well, you said this and now you're not doing it. You're being a hypocrite. Yes. Yeah. And that's, I think, is a really common stereotype or a really common way to deal with, like, the unknown of the world, right? Is like, well, life is crazy. My body's crazy. I don't know what's going on, but I know what you said. And I'm going to hold you to that. And I think that's, like, a really appealing thing to include in this game. And I think the Fae does it really well.
I feel like it's important to note this out loud because they're never going to listen to this. But I am going for dinner tonight with my high school best friend that I was madly, unrequitedly in love with for years. And I haven't seen them in 20 years. And it is happening tonight. I feel the need to, like, this is very, thinking about high school is a while. It's going to be great. It's going to be a hoot. We're going to have fun. It's not like.
I'm going to find them on LinkedIn and send them a message.
Yeah. None of that would be news to them. But it's not just because it was unrequited doesn't mean it was unacknowledged. But we had that very, like, very complicated, I think very queer experience where I was very queer and they were very not, but we were extremely close. And so there was a lot of like care for one another, but it was always heartbreaking for me. But yeah, it's wild to like, it just feels very wrapped up in me thinking about like, oh, what kind of youth was I? What happened? What are the like quintessential queer romantic and or sexual experiences?
Which, by the way, to build on that, The Mortal is the best, like, I think it's the best designed playbook. I love The Mortal so much.
What about it stands out? I mean, I like it too. Not as a challenge. I just want to hear more.
The Mortal, the fact that The Mortal is like, you, like, the Mortal starts the move True Love, which is you always have exactly one lover. The first is chosen during your backstory. If you ever fall in love with someone else instead, give them a string and they become your new lover. You always carry plus one to earning your lover's heart or fancy. And then you, all of your abilities are about like something tied to your love. But then specifically, for those who don't know Monster Hearts, everyone has a darkest self that is like the thing you turn to when you are at the edge of death. You become kind of the worst version of you. The Mortal's sex move is that when they have sex with someone, the next time the Mortal looks away from them, after having sex with them, they become their darkest self. So if you fuck the Mortal fundamentally makes you a bad person, like after, in the aftermath, like just perfect, like just a phenomenal little like teeing up, like perpetual little victim. I don't know. There's just something really good about the Mortal as this, like a playbook that is, everything is pointing at being very reactive and very passive and very unable to assert themselves. But then through all of that passivity has an incredible amount of agency and power to make everyone around them so much worse. Right.
Whomst like, amongst us has not fucked a mortal at in life.
Oh my God. Right. Like, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. They're really good at the, as the singular thing that is kind of different than all the other things.
Mm-hmm. Because the other thing is they're the I'll make you worse, right? Like everyone else is just kind of a weird freak, and the mortal is like, hey, I'm not a weird freak, but I am gonna ruin you. Like
I will make you weirder and freakier.
Yeah, I'm gonna
derogatory.
Exactly. I'm just gonna drag you into the misery.
And it's also this like this bastion of sort of, I know exactly what I want. I am a serial monogamist amidst all these other characters being unsure and figuring out what they want. And the mortal is like, no, I know exactly what I want. All my mechanics drive me toward this one thing. And that is good for me, but it's bad for whoever I am involved with.
But also notably, right? The mortal believes, the mortal understands their framework through that serial monogamy, and yet, like, you know, like there is nothing where it's like the mortal is like, the mortal is Bella, right? The mortal is like, I am in love with Edward and only Edward. There's also a hot werewolf here who I'm in love with. Like, the mortal is a hypocrite, which is so good, right? Like, so right. Perfect.
Are we close to wrapping up?
We can be.
We're at an hour.
We can.
Before the end, I do want to say thank you to Jay. I feel like there was a lot of crosstalk, and it was just like a symptom of our excitement. I hope we did not interrupt you too much. And the other thing I want to mention is that Shane, who's a really active member in our Discord, has a blog called Turn Someone On, Shut Someone Down. Which is the two starting moves in Monster Hearts. It's at turnsomeoneonshutsomeonedown.wordpress.com. And they go through, they're going through Monster Hearts kind of move by move, section by section, and just doing a deep read of each section. And I've really been enjoying it. So if you want to know more about Monster Hearts, you've already read the book, you want to see someone else's deep dive, go and check that out.
And then you can watch Critical Role play it. No, don't do that. the opposite of that. We also you can't skip the appendix now. Not for the youth.
No, absolutely not. Go this, you have to start it.
I had such a hard time. I was like, I don't like teenage things. I think my appendix now is Foxfire, which is
the browser.
Yeah.
The browser?
The browser. Firefox, you nerd. Foxfire. is an ancient Angelina Jolie movie. It is from 1996.
I'm sorry, that's older than me.
It is. It has Angelina Jolie and Jenny Shimizu, and it's like super queer and really all up in its like depressed, morose, kind of harmful, like queer longing. There's a scene where they give each other fucking stick and poke, like chest tattoos around a fire in an abandoned building. Like it, whatever. It is exactly being gay in the 90s, but with beautiful people. So
I love that. I love that so much.
It has a 6.1 on IMDb, which is
out of five, though. Out of five, which is weird. They gave it such a high rating. I mean, definitely go watch The Craft and Ginger Snap. They're mentioned in the book. My recommendation is Wild Zero, which is a 1999 film. Jay, is that older than you still?
That is older than me. In fact, that is okay. That is older than the last movie you just named. So,
no, 99, and then Max.
Oh, 99. Oh no, I'm sorry. I said 95. I'm 97.
Okay, so this is a young movie, a young book of a movie. Wild Zero is a 1999 Japanese zombie movie starring the band Guitar Wolf and many others. But it is, you know, there's some problematic portrayals of certain things for sure. But the it's happier, I think, than Monster Hearts. The moral of the story is love has no borders, nationalities, or genders, which the lead singer of Guitar Wolf, magically appears to scream at one of the main characters after he fucks up like a teenager. There's also aliens and zombies, gunfights. There's a guy in really tight little shorts and a crazy wig. It's good. It's a good movie.
The poster is amazing.
All the posters. Yeah, there are tons of different posters for it. It's great.
I love that.
Jay, thank you. Do you have something that you would like people to check out?
Maybe the youth will connect to. No, this isn't your burden to bear.
I think to me the most Monster Hearts thing that I think the youth should go check out is probably the webcomic What Happens Next, which is the story, which is to me, I've got a really big fascination with what I call like, I don't know, like post-pandemic digital art, or like art that really kind of captures something about like the 2010s and 2020s as like an internet community in a particular way. This is the thing about it's a story of a tender queer who was canceled on Tumblr about 5 years ago for their complicity in the murders of several other Tumblr users at an anime convention. And it is a webcomic about them trying to put their life back together, be active in fandom and be normal while being like they went on like a true crime podcast and they were interviewed about like what like they like and they were like it's like, you know, like it's a really fascinating story about messy youth, and I think it's pretty good. At least
this looks so good.
The first chapter is called Dog Names, and it's, yeah, very, very fantastic.
I'm looking at a page. A quote says, "Sorry I can't disappear off the face of the earth because that would be easier for you personally. My blog has nothing to do with the murder I was involved in."
Yes, the fucking, hold on.
Very funny.
There's this incredible, hold on. There's one page. I want to, I'm clicking through to find my favorite. Here we go. Do not follow or interact if you're against neo-pronouns. You are a pedophile / map or supporter. You ship abusive / toxic pairings. You think I was responsible for the deaths of Haley Gorski or Savannah Plunkett. You are going to ask me about my involvement in the death of Haley Gorski. You are anti-other / fiction kin. You follow Tumblr users gay wifing, eat boots, or dough roses.
Amazing. I'm excited to read this. Thank you. Will you tell people where they can find your work if you want them to?
If you want to read some games that are
I think, a lot less horny or compelling on that front than Monster Hearts. You can find a lot of my stuff on PossumCreekGames.com. Yuzeba's Bed and Breakfast is coming out in less than a month, and this is technically a little moment of promotional tour for that. Not really, but, like, you know, it's how I justify spending work time doing this for fun instead of, you know, whatever else I'm supposed to be doing. I make games that are queer, but a lot less weird. I think I'm a lot less brave than Avery, and I want to be more brave. But if you like my opinions, you should check that out. You should also check out my Patreon, patreon.com/possumcreek, where I talk a lot about my game opinions, and I think they're pretty good.
Agreed.
I can't wait. I can't wait for Yezebas to arrive in some kind of extremely large box, I assume.
It's disgusting. It's a fucking it's 11 pounds. It destroyed my backpack when I brought it to Gamma.
So thrilled.
You can crush your mothership box with this one.
Oh, yeah. Get wow. out of here, Sean.
Look out, Sean McCoy.
Look, the real test of an RPG's quality is its sturdiness when put into, like, a Beyblade-style ring with other RPGs. Monster Hearts might be a good game, but it wouldn't last 5 seconds in the box with the Azebas. It would get shredded.
I put Monster Hearts in the dryer, and it got fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. Azebas, though, would be fine.
Yeah. Comes out smelling fresh. It'll
outlive us all.
Yeah, we have a Discord link in the show notes.
Our first weird Patreon book episode is coming out ASAP.
Oh yeah, we recorded an episode on Dune. Maybe you've heard of it.
You're right, you're break and shatter.
I definitely accidentally got drunk while we were recording that. So
the best episodes.
Something to look forward to. That's it. Goodbye. I have no idea what our next episode's gonna be.
Yeah, send us sex games.
Yes, please.